Sam Adams is without doubt one of the most important founding fathers in America, but he's often overlooked. In fact, he's even called the lightning rod of the American Revolution, or more accurately, the War for American Independence. He certainly was one of the first to call on the American colonies to declare independence from Britain while maintaining dependence upon God. Dr. Peter Lilback is the founding president of Providence Forum. I have the privilege of serving as the executive director of the same organization, which is now a division of D. James Kennedy Ministries. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and we welcome Dr. Peter Lilback as we discuss Sam Adams and his contributions to America. Dr. Lilback, thanks so much for joining us.
Dr. Newcomb, what a joy to be with you. You're the executive director of the Providence Forum, so I'm doubly delighted to speak to you, not only because you're my favorite radio host, but you also love the ministry that I served for many years.
Well, you served, you founded it, and I thank you for that. And thank
That's
you
great.
For your
thank you.
Giving it to D. James Kennedy Ministries.
That's so exciting.
It is exciting. So tell us about Sam Adams.
All right. Well, basically, Sam Adams is really the forgotten founder in many ways. His cousin, John Adams, often takes the front stage, or one of the other Massachusetts leaders, John Hancock, is well known because of his famous signature, but neither one of those men probably would have been involved in the American Revolution if it wasn't for Sam Adams. Sam Adams was the person that really was the spark plug of the American Revolution. He was the one that was deeply concerned about the injustice of what he saw as the violation of the colonial constitutions by the Parliament of England. And he felt that there was an absolute responsibility of leaders to protect the rights of the people. In fact, John Adams put it this way: without the character of Samuel Adams, the true history of the American Revolution can never be written. Now, that's pretty amazing for an eyewitness to say that if you know who this man is and his character, you can't understand why there is an American Revolution that brought about our country. So that's the first thing. Second thing, not only is he forgotten, and he was so strategic, that he's often misrepresented. People tend to think of him as really the man who got the beer brewing industry going up in Massachusetts. And I won't debate the wisdom of enjoying a malt beverage or not, but even there, it's incorrect. He probably was not a brewer. He was sometimes mockingly called a maltster. And a maltster was someone who made the malt that went into the brewing industry. And so he was part of that, but he was never a businessman. In fact, some said he was one of those people that really never cared whether he had money or not. He was trained to go into ministry at first, but he didn't want to. He ended up going into politics. At the age of 21, he got a master's degree from Harvard, and the topic was the right of the citizens or colonists to resist a sovereign if he violates the rights of the colony. Isn't that amazing? He was already dealing with the Republican notion of constitutional rights that would give citizens the ability to stand against a monarch if he violated it. I don't think he ever knew that he would be able to put his research into practice, but of course, that's exactly what he did. We could say a lot more about his life, but he will not only be the one that is behind the scenes in getting the Sons of Liberty going in the Stamp Act, 1765, he will also probably be part of the mastermind of the Great Boston Tea Party, and he will end up being a very strategic part of the early Congress. And so he becomes a very decisive leader in the creation of the Declaration of Independence and then the whole story of American liberty. He will end up going back to Massachusetts and serving as a senator of the state and eventually as the governor. And so he is a very important leader in the American process, taking America from a colony to a resistance organization seeking their rights and helping to keep radicalism from breaking loose by establishing a new form of government that would create the basis then of the state of Massachusetts as well as the country of the United States. So we owe him a great deal.
And what exactly was his direct relation to John Adams?
Okay, he would have been, I believe, a first cousin. So he would have been an older cousin that obviously was very concerned with these issues. When you look at John Adams, here are the qualities of John Adams. One, he was a very highly trained lawyer. He was willing to exercise the legal rights of citizens, even when he may not have favored their position. So we often forget that John Adams defended the British soldiers in the aftermath of the Boston Massacre. He said they have a right for legal defense. So he had the courage to defend people on the basis of law. So he was a great legal thinker. While his cousin, Sam Adams, was not a lawyer, he was a political leader and a politician. But he was more than that. John Adams will describe him as a man of piety and of genteel behavior, well-educated, but not of a legal nature. So he was not concerned with law, but he was a gentleman, and he was very concerned with political issues and always was concerned for the moral basis of his actions. Some scholars have called him the last of the Puritans. Remember, the Puritans had a great impact on shaping New England, particularly the area of Massachusetts and Boston. And so he was very concerned that what he did would be morally right. And so the principle of resistance of a king had to be grounded in moral behavior. And so he sometimes is even called the conscience of the American Revolution. And so John Adams saw him not only as a political leader, as a motivator, but also as someone who wanted to make sure that what they did was morally defensible before God. And so he is a combination of a energizer and also a man of deep commitment that he might be pleasing to his God. So piety, virtue, and freedom were all woven together in the nature of Sam Adams as viewed by his cousin John.
Now, Sam Adams was certainly not without his critics and without his enemies, even in his own days. Now, usually that would be people on the other side, for example, the forces of Great Britain and so forth. But I was reading even in a modern book where this one fellow was saying that, you know, some of Sam Adams' critics saw him as kind of a Machiavellian manipulator. And that phrase gets kind of struck me as like, what? You know, but what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, well, to understand that phrase, we have to understand what Machiavelli believed. And he was an advisor to the popes. And he said, what you need to understand, it's power that you're seeking, and power needs to do whatever it needs to do to maintain power. So Machiavelli basically would be one who said the end justifies the means. You do whatever you need to stay in power. That was not Sam Adams' view. Sam Adams' view was, we want to be independent only if it's justifiable in the eyes of God. We don't want to be slaves, but we don't mind being faithful subjects of a just monarch and a constitutional parliament. And so he was not a Machiavellian, but what he was a strategic thinker that said, if our constitutional rights continued to be undermined and we have no recourse, then resistance is warranted. And the point was not to attack anything and just be promiscuous in protest, but to attack things that were being used to strip away God-given rights. He was a student of John Locke. He believed in the idea of life, liberty, and property as God-given rights of human beings. And he felt that there was the property of the New Englanders was being stripped away by the Parliament through the various unjust taxations that violated the Constitution. And so what he sought to do was to find various strategic and potent ways to attack those infractions on their rights and their constitutional privileges. And so in that sense, he was clever. He was resisting power with strategy. And he was certainly a thorn in the flesh to the tax collector, to the governor, to the king and the parliament. But he said, if you would stop doing what's unjust, I will stop resisting, because I am willing to follow the law. But he was the earliest one who came to realize there's no way to stop the injustices that are coming from the British Parliament and monarchy. The only way to resist it was by using strategic resistance that ultimately would lead to independence. And so because he had come to the conclusion that independence was morally justified, inescapably necessary, then he began to use all the necessary steps to pursue what he believed was a just end. As John Locke said, we must appeal to heaven and then take up arms. He had sought the rectitude of his intentions before God, as our declaration says. He said, we need to defend ourselves because we don't have a king anymore. We have a tyrant, and we need to stand fast for our rights. So that was very deeply in his mind.
Well, now, go ahead. Were you finished? I'm sorry.
I was going to just say, I'd love to talk a little bit about another part of his character as soon as you're ready, and that is his extraordinary commitment to the cause and his encouragement at what could be viewed the very lowest point in the history of being a congressional leader in the resistance against Britain. So I love, that's where his faith really shines. So I don't want to cut off your question, but if you'd like to go there, I'd love to share some thoughts there as well.
Go ahead.
Okay. So basically, in your mind's eye, imagine it's now that first 9-1-1 of American history. So you're 1777, September 11th, when the Battle of Brandywine occurs. The Battle of Brandywine is where Washington is unable to stop the British forces from invading Philadelphia and conquering the city. As a result, Congress has to flee. Lafayette is wounded. Washington has to take his men to Valley Forge and find a way to survive in the middle of the winter in basically farmland and woods with no resources. It's a difficult time. And one of the people that had to flee was none other than Sam Adams. So he knew that everything was on the line now, and he was one that was running for his life. They fled to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and ultimately 100 miles west of Philadelphia in a town called York. So York, Pennsylvania, this little town of Pennsylvania, became the headquarters. And this was an extraordinary time because not only did they lose September 11th, Brandywine Battlefield, it was followed by the Paoli Massacre, where there was the bayonet attack at night and 400 Americans are killed. We find that they are left at Valley Forge and they are without any sufficient clothing. It's estimated that one out of every nine soldiers in Washington's army did not have shoes. And when Washington said, you know where my men went by the blood stains in the snow, he was not exaggerating. It's at that time that the hope for France to help was there, but there was no provision for France at this point. The Liberty Bell has to be taken out of the city and hidden far away because it would be turned into musket balls and cannonballs.
All right, just so you know, we have about a minute and a half left to wrap this up, but go ahead.
Okay, so imagine there you are now with your fellow congressman having fled for all of your life, and you realize the noose is awaiting you. What would you say? Well, here's what Sam Adams said. If we despond, public confidence is destroyed. The people will no longer yield their support to a hopeless contest, and American liberty is no more. And he goes on to say this, let us awaken then and evince a different spirit, a spirit that shall inspire the people with confidence in themselves and in us, a spirit that will encourage them to persevere in this glorious struggle until their rights and liberties shall be established on a rock. We proclaim to the world our determination to die free men rather than to live slaves. We have appealed to heaven for the justice of our cause, and in heaven we have placed our trust. Numerous have been the manifestations of God's providence in sustaining us. In the gloomy period of adversity, we have had our cloud by day and pillar of fire by night. We've been reduced to distress, and the arm of omnipotence has raised us up. Let us still rely in humble confidence on him who is mighty to save. Good tidings will soon arrive. We shall never be abandoned by heaven while we act worthy of its aid and protection. And guess what? He was prescient. Just a couple weeks after that, on October 17th, the Battle of Saratoga occurs, and there's the great victory over General Burgoyne.
All right, and I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and close it out here, Dr. Loback, and we could pick it up in just a moment. We'll do Sam Adams Part 2. Dr. Peter Loback has been our guest, providenceforum.org for more information.